Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Well, did you know that every time Manchester City have started a Premier League season with a 4-0, they've either won the title or been relegated? Two previous 4-0 wins have launched two title-winning campaigns, while one previous 4-0 defeat was the precursor to a relegation. I've never heard of anything more scientific in my life, so you can get your 2026 title winners' shirts printed right now. On today's Blue Moon Podcast, we'll review that opening day victory at Wolves, and we'll take a look at what might be to come as City face Spurs on Saturday. We'll hear from Jack from Rule the Roost to get an idea of what's happening under their new manager, Thomas Frank's stewardship. Plus, we'll take a look at some of City's traditional bogey teams, given all the weird stuff that's happened against Tottenham in the past. I'm David Mooney, and with me today, I've got two City fans. I've got Chris Higginbottom.
Hello there.
And One Football's Dan Burke.
Hiya.
How are we doing? How's things, Higgy? Good to be back for the new season?
Yeah, just back off holiday, feeling suitably in need of another holiday. But yeah, to an extent, recharged. I've taken in a lot of the sun's energy, so I'm feeling good. Pretty powered up. Gone from pale blue to what I call embarrassed beige, sort of tinge of brown with a flush of pink, soon to disappear over the next day or so.
Excellent. Dan, you good?
Very well, thanks. Yeah, that win last weekend was a nice little settler for the season, wasn't it, really? You know, put me in a good mood for the week, so feeling positive about things, and I'm sure that will all go to pot this weekend.
Yeah, we'll get into all of that. First, I normally we do a little question to start with it. And I was trying to think of something, and like Kieran Murray suggested about your favourite goals going on holiday because of this social media thing that City are doing.
Oh, God.
But I stumbled across this little piece of trivia, so I thought I'd stick it to you. One to think about, and we'll give the answer at the end of the show. So there's no pressure to get it. We'll kind of have a think about it, see what we get at the end of the show. Erling Haaland has 21 Premier League goals in the month of August across his 12 games in that month. Only two players have more than him in the Premier League. They took 44 and 47 games respectively. So he's done it in about half the time as these two. Who are they? Who are the other players that have scored more in the month of August than Erling Haaland?
Rolando Bianchi.
If only. If only. He might crop up a bit later on, I don't know.
Oh, across the whole of the Prem, not so.
Yeah, since 1992. Any ideas, Higgy? Any to chuck out there?
I suppose you just think of top goal scorers, don't you? Like Shearer, yeah. Aguero.
It is a solid strategy to
be
fair.
Yeah, you know, not just an annoying face.
Harry Kane. Yeah,
Harry Kane is a good shout.
Famously never scored in August, did he?
Oh, until, that's true, actually. Yeah, bloody
until
hell.
Until he scored against City.
Oh, really? Wow.
That's yeah, he always struggled in the month of August. So, but Haaland always starts the season off particularly well. So, you two have a think about that. We'll get some suggestions at the end of the show, and we'll reveal the answer then as well. Let's start then with the game at Wolves and Higgy. We'll talk about debutants a bit later on as well. But I think the place to start in this performance is Tijani Reinders. First player to score and assist on his City Premier League debut since Aguero. That's not a bad start, is it?
Not a bad start and not a bad, not a bad company to be in. He just looks absolutely sublime, doesn't he? He seems to have everything in his locker. My favourite bit, apart from the really confident finish and the lovely assist, was just that touch. From the long ball
for the third goal,
yeah, where he basically just, you know, when someone doesn't just kill the ball, they make it extinct. It was just absolutely dead as, and then he just glided along with it.
I was wondering if the past tense was glid.
I know, I always struggle with these things, and then put far too much thought into it under, comes up under immense pressure. But yeah,
glowed.
He glowed along.
Glide, no. he just looks absolutely mint, doesn't he? I mean, he's looked pretty good in pre-season as well. A couple of feet-finding moments where he perhaps didn't know what position he was going to be in a couple of games in the Club World Cup, but it's very exciting, and it's to have him. He looks the real deal, and he's obviously got big shoes to fill if he's trying to take over the mantle of someone like De Bruyne, without wishing to put too much pressure on him. But we do need a bit of a talisman in there, and he looks tailor-made.
Yeah, Dan, we were talking during the game as it was going on, and like you threw it out there that he was having a little bit of a difficult start to his City career, first 20 minutes or so. And I was like, I see this. He's getting knocked around a little bit. And then after that, it was just kind of like, no. Okay, I understand what the Premier League is. Here we go. Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, every player has an adaptation period, don't they? And his was about 15 minutes. So that's not bad, is it, really? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, so I've had such good vibes about this signing. Like, having not watched a lot of him at Milan or, you know, his previous clubs, but I'd heard a lot about him sort of online and from people that I work with, like Italians I work with that had watched him really closely. And I thought, you know, a lot of people were saying it's a real sort of hidden gem, this, like a little bit of a, you know, just we've unearthed a, you know, a bit of a coup, whatever you want to call it. And I like what I saw of him in the Club World Cup. I liked what I saw of him in that friendly against Palermo the other week. And I've just had this sort of feeling that he was going to be one of these players, these kind of like, you know, he seems quite humble, quite down-to-earth guy, like plays football with a smile on his face. You know, just those kind of players that come along every now and again, sort of like Pablo Zabaleta type player, maybe, where he's just like, you know, Pep's going to love him. Bernardo Silva, he kind of like that kind of caliber of player where he's just going to be a really talented player, but just very like humble about it. I've been looking forward to him and sort of like saying to people that I could see him be like a contender for like player of the year in his first season and stuff like that. And then when he was giving the ball away, getting knocked off the ball in the first sort of 15, 20 minutes the other day, I started thinking, oh, I don't know, actually, maybe it's going to take a little bit of time for him to get up to speed. But then, yeah, bloody hell, with one like shake of his ankle, he slips away from two players, chips it over for Rico Lewis for that in the build up to that first goal.
Such
amazing.
Good feet, wasn't it?
The second goal, like what a finish that is, like, you know, instinctive finish to take that first time and find the bottom corner. Brilliant. And then his assist for the third goal as well was brilliant. So yeah, I think we've got a real player on our hands here.
In my defense, I missed the first 10 minutes or so, and it was quite sporadic. You know, when you're on a holiday and you're desperate to get back for the match, but you don't want to be like making
we need to go.
You don't want to be City centric because you're literally on a break away from everything. And it's like, yeah, it starts at 5:30. Yeah. I mean, no, any time's good. Yeah, if we could go now, it's great. And then it's sort of on the laptop on the table. And I was like, yeah, didn't give it my full attention. So I was lucky enough to miss any sort of wobbles he may have had initially. I mean, Dan's talking about such a sort of low-key, unearthed gem. How have we gone so under the radar with this? He was playing midfielder of the year in Serie A. Mm. Where wasn't there any like gazumping attempts, or, you know, there's always someone trying to ruin our fun, isn't there? We seem to have just got away scot-free with this.
Yeah, it's one of those kind of one of those transfers where you wonder like what's the catch here? it seems too good to be true. And you know like you always get those scam adverts, don't you? Though, you'd say if it looks too good to be true, then it obviously is. Yeah. So like what's going on here? Why have we been able to pick him up so cheaply?
You've just been tapping him up for 2 years. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe that's exactly what they want us to think.
Wake up, really sheeple.
Don't really know what I mean by that. Higgy, the other side of this as well is one of the things that City were missing a lot last season was runs from deep. They effectively, every time they made runs from deep, they lost the ball and then were counter-attacked. So Guardiola just went, right, none of this nonsense. We're going to stay in shape and not get beaten. And you can see it's only one game and one performance in the league from Reinders, but you can see what he can add in that regard this season. The amount of just energy back in the midfield there.
Yeah, he's got the legs, but he seems to be pretty disciplined as well, which we really do need. Having said that, I mean, against Wolves, we still conceded some really big chances before going ahead. There was I know one was offside, but it was like a needless offside. If he'd have played his cards right, we would have been one down, and then it's a completely different kind of complexion in it on the game.
Is that just good defending, though, holding the line?
Yeah, but I suppose it's both, isn't it? It's good defender. He's standard defending. And for my mind, just watch the line as a forward and you stay onside and you do what you did from your offside position. Do you know what I mean? He should have. I'm not explaining that very well. But yeah, two sides to that coin, isn't it? It's good defending, but it's not exceptional or outlandishly, oh my God, hoodwinked you there, had your pants down there. He's just strayed when he shouldn't have, and we could have easily conceded. But yeah, I'll take your point. I suppose maybe it's just calm down. It was good defending.
They were poor for a period before scoring, weren't they, City? There was a bit like when that goal went in, you know, before I'd seen that the flag had gone up, I was like shouting all sorts at the TV screen. It just felt like a proper sort of like flashback to last season's kind of PTSD. Like, well, here we go again.
This is it. So I don't know whether to get, I mean, I don't want to get too carried away anyway, because, you know, eternal pessimist and all that. But I suppose it's Wolves' first home game. You expect, you can't be in control 100% of the game. You expect the home team to have a bit of a flourish and, you know, the crowd are up for it. You expect to be under pressure at some point in the game. And the fact is we got a clean sheet out of it. And going back to the actual question, yeah, the shape looked pretty good for the most part. Pep was particularly pleased with the first half when we conceded those chances. And I suppose it was a bit more open second half, which he won't have liked. But overall, the signs, I mean, come on, clean sheet, four goals away from home, top of the league, end the league now.
Yeah, decent start. And as I say, City always win the league with a 4-0 win at the start of the season. So there we go. Dan, let's go a bit further into the midfield, because certainly last season, there was a lot of concerns about the fact that obviously City's midfield was as porous as it was. They brought in Nico Gonzalez in January, and then he barely played between then and the end of the season. He got a few games when he arrived and then didn't really feature until the last couple of games of the season. Obviously concerns about whether he would, like, if he didn't play against Wolves, it was like, okay, well, what the hell's going on here? And then he does play against Wolves and he was really good. So it's kind of like, it kind of like shows that 6 months, like it's almost as if he's been developing behind the scenes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, which I think was probably the plan for those players that were brought in January, wasn't it? With perhaps the exception of Marmoush, who was the only one really expected to make an instant impact. I think, you know, it was a bit of a bedding in period from the last year, and you'd hope that they will sort of hit the ground running this year. And, like, to be honest with you, with Nico Gonzalez, I love him. I've been impressed with him since day one, basically. I think he's really, really good. I was a bit surprised that he fell out of the team last year. I don't know if it was maybe just the kind of, there was that period when Pep sort of leaned back on the old guard a little bit, just to kind of like get through games and grind out some results, and then he did come back in at the end of the season, scored a really good goal. Was it Bournemouth at home?
Bournemouth,
scored
yeah.
That goal, yeah. But the way he sort of can sort of drive forward with the ball and sort of move through the lines, I think he's really, really impressive. I'd love to see him in the same midfield as Rodri at some point. I think it gives us a bit of extra solidity. I mean, that was talked about when he was brought in, that he wasn't necessarily a replacement for Rodri or a stand-in for Rodri. He was someone who would play with Rodri. So I think that could work really well in future. And yeah, I just think he's really good. I think the sort of talk around him potentially leaving the club in the summer was absolutely baffling. And I think any of the City fans that haven't got on board with him yet, I'm not really sure what they're seeing or what I'm seeing that they're not. You know, it's like, I think he's a really, really good player and I'm really excited about him.
Yeah, and it worked really well, I think, with Bernardo alongside him, Higgy, because as much as we think of Bernardo as the creative force as that he used to be, you've got there someone who understands what Guardiola wants and needs and can recognise. There was a moment in the first half where Nico had gone forward with the ball, like the attack had broken down and Bernardo was the one sweeping up behind it. It's like Bernardo's got the kind of the Guardiola nous on the pitch to go, this is what the performance needs. And if I'm alongside Nico, one of us goes, one of us stays. We can, like, they work really well together.
100%. And that's why he's been made captain. He's got that nous and he's got the willing legs. Well, he's a willing runner. Hopefully his legs will be willing. But I totally agree with what you've just said, and I also fully endorse Pep's decision to make him captain and his decision to overrule the players making that choice, given the choice
the decision they made recently.
Yeah. But it was interesting to Pep.
I've always said democracy's overrated, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You need a benevolent dictator. That's cool. But yeah, I mean, his Pep's comments about Bernardo made me laugh, actually, because, you know, he was saying, like, it was like that old joke, you know that joke where there's, and you have to forgive me, you can edit it out, but I think it's Bernard Manning, whose views do not align with mine or the podcast, I'm sure. That old joke where there's someone and they're on their deathbed and they're speaking to their wife and they're like, oh, during those dark times of my youth, you were by my side. You know, I had that terrible injury and there you were by my side. You were with me. And then I opened a business and we went bankrupt and I was penniless and you were there by my side. And now on my deathbed, here you are, you're by my side. And do you know what? You're fucking jinx. It was like when we were losing game after game and all the players were injured, Bernardo is there. And we lose another game and Bernardo's there. And it's like, yeah, you're making him sound like a bit of a jinx here, Pep, rather than arguing to be captive. But despite all what I've just said, yeah, fully endorse it. And I'm pleased to see him implementing the manager's philosophy on the pitch.
Yeah, I must admit, Dan, I think that's the strangest endorsement of someone I've ever heard.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I did not have Bernard Manny on my bingo card today, but
I didn't.
Chris is full of surprises, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Always is.
It was like, I was literally reading Pep's comments. I was thinking, you're making it sound like every single bad thing that happened, Bernardo was right in the middle of it, and yet this is your ringing endorsement. So yeah, that's on Pep, the dodgy endorsement.
Yeah, there we are.
I thought he looked like a new man on Saturday, though. Didn't you? Like, the way he played, I think he seems to have really taken on that responsibility already. He was like, drop it. Like, he's never been work shy, or, you know, he's always been a good runner, like we've said. But yeah. I just feel like he really was everywhere, all over the pitch, like, you know, making things happen, telling people
setting an example.
To do.
Yeah.
Exactly.
When has he last had this long off? It must feel
that's
like
true as well. Yeah, that is true. Another player I wanted to ask about, Dan. I mean, we'll get to Savinho a bit later on because of the Spurs stuff. But the starting lineup came out and Oscar Bob was given the opportunity on the right hand side, Doku on the left. What did you make of the wide players? Just because there was obviously a lot of excitement around Bob at the start of last season, and then he ended up missing the entire season. So then we got the opportunity on Saturday.
Mm. He is like a new signing, isn't he? As they always say. Yeah, I mean, well, he was excellent. I mean, there was that period when that I touched on earlier when City weren't very good for about 10, 15 minutes, when I was getting a little bit frustrated with both the wingers, where there seemed to be a sort of unwillingness to kind of like take on the man a little bit. There was some crosses coming to the box that were just sort of floated and not really causing much danger. And it was getting a little bit frustrating. And then I think the first goal just kind of calmed everyone down. Obviously, they went 2-0 up fairly soon afterwards as well. And then once they were calmer and feeling a bit more positive, like then they started to express themselves a little bit more. Like there was some superb touches that Bob took, that one where he sort of like had about eight players around him and just sort of like kept the ball somehow in the box was amazing. And, you know, he's an incredible talent.
Do you know what that reminded me of? That, well, like, there was a moment in the 6-1 derby at Old Trafford where David Silva did that.
Yeah,
and like, it's obviously lofty comparisons to stick on a young lad. Oh, by the way, you did this like David Silva. But like it was the same sort of thing. He kept the ball under so much pressure with like 5, 6, 7 defenders around him.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm as excited about Bob as I am about any of them. Sorry, Karen.
No, I completely agree. He will really add something that we were lacking last season, I think. And, you know, if Savinho does go and he isn't replaced, then I think we've got somebody there who can play a lot of games this season, hopefully, and really make a contribution. As for Doku, like, you know, I didn't think he had a bad game here by any stretch of the imagination, but it sort of is what it is with him now, isn't it? Like, if he can add some end product to his game, then he'll be an absolutely amazing world beater. But that if gets bigger every single season, and, you know, there's still a lot to be desired from him going forward. But, you know, he is very quick. He's, you know, hard to handle for opposition defences and does cause problems. And I'd like to see him adding a few more goals to his game this season, hopefully. And if he does, like, yeah, we've got a hell of a player on our hands. But, you know, I think we've got a few options in the wide areas this season as well, which is going to be quite encouraging to see. With like Marmoush can come in and play off that left-hand side as well. So I think we've got, a good structure and attack.
This is a paid promotion for NordVPN. I've been making podcasts for, well, far too many years now, if we're being honest, and it means that I've recorded all sorts of episodes in all sorts of places. And one thing that I've found very useful when recording and using public Wi-Fi spots, like when I've recorded with guests while in cafes or hotels, or even in one case, a motorway service station, it's been NordVPN. Using NordVPN means I can connect to public Wi-Fi safely, so when I put in any passwords or sensitive data and when logging into websites, I know that I'm doing it securely and with no risk of it being compromised. It's really easy to use too. For me, I can have connected to NordVPN before I've even plugged in the microphone. It takes one click to do it manually, but it can also be done automatically as well. There are more than 8,000 servers to connect to across 126 countries, and I've always had amazing speed, meaning podcast calls have been crystal clear. I've got NordVPN on my MacBook, but you can also use it on every major platform. That includes Windows, Android, iOS, Linux, and even your Android TV if you've got one of those. And if you're one of those fans who will follow City wherever they end up in the Champions League this season, with NordVPN, you can make sure not to miss out on any content from home that you subscribe to while you're abroad. You can switch your location and access apps and streaming services in other countries, so it means anything you're paying for at home isn't going to waste while you're following City overseas. One NordVPN account can also be used on up to 10 devices, so you can protect every device in your household. And to get the best discounts off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/bluemoon. That's nordvpn.com/bluemoon. Our link will also give you an extra 4 months on the 2-year plan, and there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is also in the podcast episode description.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
And Higgy, we touched on the defence before. It was a return to Diaz and Stones at the back, so that was like an old comfort blanket to wrap ourselves in from the start. But also James Trafford as the starting goalkeeper on his debut. There was a lot of pressure on him, and he did really well.
He did. There's, you know, no negatives really about his performance. I've been a bit mean to him in private conversations, just because, and it's nothing, it's not really on him. It's just, I feel that Ederson has been bad-mouthed a lot, considering his achievements with the club and his influence on, you know, like the key kind of pivot to the style. He's been like the fulcrum, sorry, of where we build from and the way we play. And Ederson, a lot of people are just like, he's rubbish, he didn't make any saves, get rid of him. And it's like, are we talking about the same player? Like, he's been absolutely amazing. He's won a lot, and he's basically better on the ball than a lot of midfielders. And I was kind of a bit resentful of Trafford coming in, just because, like, I think I was being a little protective of Ederson, which is a bit pathetic because obviously I've no... I'm a football fan. I'm allowed.
He's a grown man that you don't know. Yeah,
exactly, yes.
Leave him alone!
That's it. And then, you know, for me to call him things like, you know, a telescopic scarecrow or a mutant bumpkin, or I think I settled on the barnyard Goliath, which is quite flattering, so I've kind of settled on that one. But yeah, he's been great. He's been great. Looks really confident. I think my main misgiving with Trafford is just that he just doesn't look aggressive enough sometimes, but he plays with enough aggression for that not to be a problem. Just looks really like mild-mannered and quite young and meek in face, and I don't know.
I was going to say, the hardest save he had to make, I mean, Wolves were offside again, but he didn't know it at the time, when he came steaming out and made that block just after the offside goal. And I'm kind of like, he's up for this.
Yeah. It always looks great, doesn't it, when you steam out and win the ball. It's, you do that 10 times and then steam out and clear someone out, get sent off, and it's a penalty, and we start losing, then things might change. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to give a good summary on one game, but like I say, no negatives at all. I thought he was really commanding, and his distribution was pretty good. No Cruyff turns on the line, but hey ho.
He did have that one moment on the line where
he did have a little bit of a but he dealt with that well. Ish.
Dan, the entire back four then as well, in front of him, like I say, Stones and Diaz back. It's five years since that partnership started. It feels like only yesterday, and you know, here we are. It'd be good to get a fit John Stones this season, wouldn't it? Because of we saw the difference in what City can do when he's in the team. But then also you've got like the selections there as well. Rico Lewis at fullback and Ait Nouri, who, it's kind of like his debut has gone a little bit under the radar, but he did really well as well.
Yeah, he did. I mean, that's another signing that I was really happy about in the summer. I've really appreciated him whenever I've seen him play, and I thought he would really add something. And we'd obviously signed a left back for the first time in years, so that was nice. And yeah, I thought he was really good. You know, maybe not that difficult, maybe not that easy to make your debut for your new club against your old club. You know, it's probably a bit of a strange feeling and a little bit of pressure on you, perhaps. But yeah, I thought he dealt with it well. It was interesting that I thought he played quite differently in this game to the way he played in that friendly against Palermo. He was coming inside a lot. At this time, he played sort of a lot more out wide, like hugging the touchline a little bit more. And yeah, he's got decent recovery pace. And you know, there's been a lot of talk this summer about, oh yeah, he's kind of good going forward, but he's not that good defensively. I didn't see that get exposed in this game, but obviously it's going to be a long season. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, really pleased with that signing. And Lewis, like, I was really pleased for him that he put this performance in, because I think he gets a lot of criticism from the fan base. Some of it just, some of it unjust. You know, I think if you went back to kind of this time last year, like, he was still so highly rated among City fans and perhaps outside. You know, he was getting the England call up and stuff, and then was a bit of a victim of circumstance, probably played a bit more than he should have done for a player of his age last season. Got exposed a little bit, and it, when he is put in sort of tricky defensive positions, he can be exposed. You know, his physical attributes have been sort of you know, talked about by his own manager, that, you know, it's not where you would ideally like someone to be, you know, his height and strength. But, you know, on the ball, I think he's a top player, and I think his awareness to make that pass to Haaland and to get that run into the box was outstanding for that first goal.
It's not an easy pass, that, either, is it? The way he delivered it across the box made it an easy finish for Haaland.
Exactly.
But to get it across like that, it was really difficult.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's talk that he's going to sign a new contract very soon, isn't there? And I'm really glad about that, because I love the kid.
Are either of you a bit worried about Pep's comments about Lewis? Because I just got like an inference that I would have had you away, mate. He's like, well, you know, if he was bigger, then I'd say, what a player. It's like, you can still say that. But he didn't. I don't know.
It is a bit of a strange thing to say about somebody, isn't it? I think, yeah, because I think, you know, Lewis is, he's not really a right back, is he? He's a midfielder kind of playing in that position. But I can't see him ever really being good enough to play in midfield for City, kind of like Nunez. So they're both being played kind of out of position. And it's like, well, if you're not happy with either of those players, buy a fucking right back. Like, why are we doing this then? Like, you know, it's not that hard, is it, surely? So either sort of play them out of position and back them to do it, or replace them. I don't get it, really.
Yeah, but he said, Guardiola certainly, he talked this week about wanting to keep Lewis, and Lewis has obviously come out and said that he wants to stay. So we expect there will be some sort of contract extension announced very soon, if not by the time you've heard this. Let's look ahead to the game with Spurs on Saturday. We'll begin by getting the thoughts on the new season and the new look Spurs from Jack from Rule the Roost podcast. Quick warning, this was all recorded before we knew about Eze's potential move to Arsenal instead of Spurs. So enjoy the difference in tone that might be.
Dare I say, of a game that we capitulated in the last 10 minutes, we actually played really quite well in the Super Cup. I was really quite shocked. And obviously see also Burnley, where we could classically potentially slip up. First game of the season, Burnley, sort of staunch defensive record last year in the Championship. Coming to White Hart Lane, obviously Richarlison's up top. We don't really know if he's any good or not still. We've won that one 3-0. We look organized, we're pressing effectively. I'm pleasantly very surprised. I really am.
Has there been a big shift with Frank? Or is it kind of tightening up what Ange was trying to do? Do you know what I mean?
I think there's been a big shift, just in so much as he's already demonstrated a massive amount of tactical flexibility. We've started the PSG game, three at the back with the two wingers, and then we've switched to a more sort of classic four at the back when we've played against Burnley. I would say that in both games, we've actually started the game on the front foot. Burnley, we actually fell victim to this when Frank was in charge of Brentford. Brentford's kind of like, it's probably not the best term for it, but they're sort of blitzkrieg attack from kickoff, when they just go straight straight at you, take you by surprise. We actually gave that a go against Burnley on the kickoff. So we are playing on the front foot. We are going for it. You'll see, like, so we saw it, I mean, the classic kind of game of two halves, if you like, in a preseason friendly against, which should not be a thing. I just want to add, no, it's a Man City pod. You lot don't care. But still, a preseason game against Arsenal is just, no. Anyway, in the preseason game against Arsenal, game of two halves, we were very front footed. First half, nicked a goal. And then second half, it was, the only way you can put it, murderball. We sat back, you know, 15 men behind the ball. Didn't let Arsenal have a sniff. And it doesn't really speak to the sort of the proud values and history of Tottenham Hotspur. But if we can get some games, big games over the line, because that's usually where Spurs fall apart, right? Like we will often be a team that can go 1-0 up at Anfield or go 1-0 up at the Emirates and look like we're doing quite well and then end up getting done. But under Frank, no. I mean, I think Frank, It's a totally different approach. Ange was guts and glory, all out football, aside for in the Europa League final where he actually did sort of completely go back on that. Whereas Frank, he's not afraid to switch it up. He's not afraid to sit back. He's not afraid to dig in deep and try and preserve a lead. I don't, for what it's worth, I don't actually feel we were doing that against PSG. PSG just suddenly remembered they were really good. And, you know, pinned us back. But no, it's very different to Ange. And it's, I don't know, it's strange, mate. It's a new world, and it's something that we're having to come to terms with.
Yeah, I'm almost kind of interested in how he'll approach this weekend, because Thomas Frank has always made it difficult for City, always. And yes, City have won a fair few games against Brentford. Brentford are one of the few promoted teams to come to the Etihad and win in the first couple of seasons in the Guardiola era. And they deserved that win as well, the way they played and the way they dug in and fought for it. And I'm just concerned that, obviously, I mean, we'll talk about hoodoos a bit later on in the show, but like Tottenham hoodoo plus Thomas Frank tactical nous equals absolutely horrible game for City on Saturday. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It is going to be interesting. I think I wouldn't be surprised to see us approach this game in the way that we did the PSG game. So starting with three at the back, which would be Danso, Romero and Van de Ven. There's a nice balance to that from Tottenham's perspective. And you'll also get to see Kevin Danso's Delap-esque long throw that he's, you know, this is one of Frank's things. I don't know if you had seen this. He essentially did a throw-in competition in preseason training for the players. So you wanted to see who had the longest throw. And it was Kevin Danso. And surprisingly enough, Lucas Bergvall was right up there as well.
He doesn't look big enough to have a long throw. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. It's come as a surprise to us all. But no, I think we'll probably, I wouldn't be surprised to see us start with the three centre backs away at City. But I would dare say we will still be going for it. Whether or not by that point we have Ezra in, I don't know if we'll be talking about that at any point. But it might see a sort of rotation to how we go about attacking in the final third versus how it was against PSG. But I think we'll approach it much the same, as in a solid defensive base, but still taking it to you, still trying to sort of find those pockets of space that we can exploit. Kudus has been something of a revelation. I had no idea he was, you know, we signed a good winger from West Ham, in my opinion. That's how much I knew. The lad looks absolutely phenomenal so far, and he's struck up a really nice partnership with a seemingly rejuvenated Richarlison, who looks every bit the R9 as one of his Brazilian predecessors once was, mate. Against PSG, he was holding up everything. That's just a trite observation for me. He doesn't play anything like the old Ronaldo does. He's more like a, I said it on my pod the other day, and I didn't actually get much pushback. Kind of like a Kane light. And I mean that in so much as he was added so much value outside of the box, playing with his back to goal, holding up the ball, bringing the kind of the wingers into play, passing the ball about really nicely, but also managing to just get into space, get at the opposition, get into good scoring positions in and around the box. And one of those obviously ended up being that spectacular sort of scissor come bicycle kick thing against Burnley the other day. But I wouldn't be surprised to see us see us go at you though, mate.
Yeah. Well, let's touch on the transfers then, because you mentioned Kudus already. Obviously, this is the post-Son era now as well for Spurs, which is another player that City are delighted to see the back of. Let's be perfectly honest about that. And Savinho as well. The story at the moment is that he isn't going to be leaving City. That's changed all week. So by the time this goes out, it might have changed again. And you've mentioned Eze there. So like, how do you see the business this summer? And is there much more to happen?
It's always a dangerous game talking about transfer dealings at Tottenham, because you're either going to get... There's two very like staunch camps in the Tottenham fan base, which are generally... Daniel Levy is great and beyond reproach, and you're an idiot if you don't see how great his pragmatism has been for the club. And you are the reason why this club doesn't win anything, because you back a chairman that puts the season ticket prices up year on year, focuses on Beyonce concerts and Kendrick Lamar concerts and F1 go-kart tracks, and doesn't care about Tottenham as a footballing club. Whereas I think, to be honest, like outside of internet polarization, most people are kind of like, it would be nice to see Spurs go for it a bit more now. We've built the stadium. Everyone's been very patient. We were told once the new stadium's built, we're going to have this. It was called a game-changing stadium, right? It was going to allow us to actually go for it. We had that Pochettino team that was, it genuinely was a whisker away from winning the lot, really. But we held fire. We didn't really add to it. We didn't really add that kind of Virgil van Dijk or Alisson Becker as Liverpool did. You know, they pushed the button and they got it done, adding those kind of ready-made signings. We've still ticked along, adding the Papu Matassars, the Archie Grays, the Lucas Bergvalls. They're all fantastic players. But what we also want to see added to the team is an Eze.
Yeah, someone like a bit that. More ready. Yeah,
exactly. 27 years old, England international, has displayed time and time again that he can do it on the biggest stage. You know, scored an FA Cup winning goal for Crystal Palace. You know, he's got that main character energy, if you like. When are Spurs going to sign players like that? And it's been a long and protracted summer. Obviously, we got Kudus over the line, and as I say, I wasn't that excited about it, but that's my own ignorance. I didn't realise he's actually a very good player. A lot of people assured me he was a very good player at the time, so that's great. The Morgan Gibbs-White deal that never ended up happening, following, say, 2 or 3 days after we'd actually signed Kudus, getting the here we go, Morgan Gibbs-White's coming to Spurs, was suddenly like, wow, we're doing it. We're actually doing the thing that we've wanted to do. Then that fell to pieces, and we know the whole story of Marinakis and this, the bizarre sort of hostage video that they put out when he ended up signing a new contract for Forest. Since the Morgan Gibbs-White deal fell to pieces, it's just kind of felt like we're a bit all over the shop. The Savinho thing, it feels like an agent or somebody has come to the sort of the clubs around City and said, look, my player, he's looking at a World Cup this coming summer. He wants to be playing more football, probably wants to be playing Champions League football. Anyone fancy a punt on him? I wouldn't want to call it right now because, like you say, it's yo-yoed, right? I've seen earlier on in the deal, it was like, this looks like it's absolutely going to happen. And it seemed to be that way from both Spurs and City ITKs, both of them saying, yeah, Savinho to Spurs looks like it's going to happen. And as it's dragged on, City are maybe thinking, either, you know, maybe we actually do want to hold on to this lad because he's good. And also, why should we give this lad to Spurs for a cut price? Because Spurs are always going to try. We're always going to try and whittle the price down. We will start at 65 mil and then say, well, actually, performance-based stuff of 5 mil and this and that. And up front, we'll give you 20 mil and then we'll give you another 20 mil over 10 years. Or, you know, it will be something like that. And I reckon it's probably just hit a point where you lot are like, pay up or do one. I don't know how much we actually need him, if I'm brutally honest. I know a lot of people, Spurs fans, will probably not like me saying that because people are very excited about the idea of him. I'm sure he's a very good player, don't get me wrong, but I honestly can't say I look at Savinho in the same way as I do the Eze deal. Eze's 27 years old. He's clearly an exceptional player. I thought at one point he was definitely going to be going to you. or to Liverpool or to Arsenal. And we're kind of, yeah, if we're next in the queue, then fine, great, I don't mind. I think his signing transforms our season. I think we're suddenly a team that can aspire to be knocking on the door of the top six again, as opposed to, I hope we finish in the top half of the table kind of thing, especially after last year. Savinho, I'm not sure it's as big a deal for us, and I wonder if that's the feeling that's echoed by the club.
Yeah, it's that ready thing again, isn't it? Like Ezra's a bit more ready, I guess, than Savinho is right now. Well, Jack, we've obviously got the game this weekend. We've got the charity bet coming up. So how do you think it's going to go? What's your score prediction for that? I mean, good luck to you on this one, because all the unpredictable factors of both teams right now, plus throw in the hold that Spurs have over City. And I mean, I don't know what to expect.
I might just be annoying, mate, and say that I think we might edge it. I like, just for what you say, just, we can talk about like hoodoos and club DNAs and whatever. I don't know. It just seems to be that we have a level of kind of belief when it comes to Manchester City games, a belief that we don't have annoyingly when we play Arsenal or Chelsea or Liverpool as well. But we do tend to go into these games with a level of belief. Thomas Frank, as you've also said, kind of has managed to get the measure of Guardiola a couple of times. We just seem good. We seem pretty solid. And I think we might be able to just take that energy to you until people figure it out. So let's say we sneak it 2-1. But equally, I wouldn't be surprised if we like went 2-0 up and then capitulated like we did against PSG as well, simply because you're an exceptional team, aren't you? So, but let's say 2-1 Spurs.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Blue Moon Podcast. If City won't let you down on the pitch, let us let you down off it instead.
That was Jack from Rule the Roost. Higgy, now that you've seen City this season, how do you feel about this game? Because obviously you've got like Spurs hoodoo plus Thomas Frank coaching them equals an awful prospect for City, surely?
Yes, basically. I mean, we could be 20 games in, top of the league unbeaten, and Tottenham going through a mediocre spell, and it would still give me the same level of jittery anxiety that it does. I don't feel anything other than, oh God, it's Spurs. But it'd be interesting, because you can't really work out at this stage of the season how good we're going to be or how good Spurs are going to be. It's like, you know, you're putting two dogs against each other that know the other dog, but each dog has been given, I don't know, new claws. What a shit analogy.
I was fascinated watching that unravel in real time. Unravel
is the word. Is the right word. Yeah. I feel like I am unraveling there. But to pick up the ravels, it's impossible to call, really. We should win. We're at home. First home game of the season. You'd expect the crowd to be bang up for it. The players surely will be. Spurs are Spurs. You just—I don't know. I would hate to call it, but I had to because you asked me to. So
yeah, you're going to have to come to that a bit later on.
Yeah.
Dan, what do you want to see from City that will stop the single most obvious result ever?
Well, more of the same from last week, I would imagine. You know, like just the way they played, the way they approached the game. You know, after that first period when it wasn't too great, you'd hope to see a similar kind of level of performance. You'd hope to see them feeling a bit confident about themselves. You know, like the question you asked to Chris, how do I feel about the season now that I've seen City? Like, I went into the season not feeling particularly optimistic about our chances of winning the title. You know, compared to the rivals for that. Obviously, you now feel a bit better after a good win like that, but it was only Wolves. You know, they are a relegation candidate potentially this season. They are quite a poor side, I think. You know, we're going to get tested a lot more against Spurs. Spurs looked pretty good in their opening game of the season, but it was only Burnley, who again, you know, been tipped by many for relegation and probably will go down. So, and for Thomas Frank, this will be the first sort of big test of him, and I think he'll probably be feeling a bit of pressure on this game, and it's our first game at home. So, you know, like, we want to continue this strong start to the season in front of our own fans.
This swingometer's going like left to right, like really, I mean, like, violently, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, like, I could imagine there's going to be some changes to the team. I don't think he'll pick the same 11. So you could see Foden coming in if he's back fit, which I think he is. You could maybe see Cherki start in this game. Maybe Marmoush comes in as well. Like, he's going to rotate a little bit. And I think those bringing those three players into the team has got to improve us, you'd imagine. So, like, you know, I think we've got reason to feel confident about this. But, you know, Spurs are a good side. You know, you saw the way City were playing with a really high line last week. That's something that Spurs can exploit. You know, Richarlison's in good form, scored a couple of good goals for them
weekend.
So, I fancy it to be a fantastic game, actually. I'm really looking forward to it and hope that it ends positively for us.
You've mentioned a few players who could come in, Dan. Is Ederson one of them? If he's no longer real and he's not injured and hasn't left?
For me, no, because I don't think a player whose head is potentially elsewhere, who's thinking about a move away, should be playing. I would, you know, keep him on the bench and give Trafford a run until the end of the transfer window, which is, what, not that long away now, 10 days or something?
A couple of weeks, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I would wait and see how that materialises. If Ederson is still here when the transfer window closes, then obviously it's a different matter. Perhaps he then comes in and has a run of games himself, and then, you know, it's between him and Trafford competing for that number one jersey. But, yeah, for now, I think Trafford deserves to play again after the way he played against Wolves, and I would like to see him given that chance.
Yeah. Hickey, there's other options there as well, because there's been rumours all week, and again, talking about swingometers going violently from one thing to the other. Savinho, as far as we were aware, was likely to be a Spurs player very soon. That fell through entirely earlier in the week, and then it looked like, as we're talking with Jack there, it looked like Eze was going to be a Spurs player. Now it looks like he's going to be an Arsenal player. So the question then is whether Spurs come back and try and nab Savinho, and whether his price has just gone up. Like, where do you see, it feels very chaotic at the moment. Where do you see all of this with Savinho right now?
I find it pretty baffling, and I'm totally unable to make sense of how much we would be willing to accept for Savinho. How good do we really think he is? Because, I mean, an offer's in the region of, like, was it 50-odd million, 50, 60
They're
million?
Talking about 80 now.
80 million? We've turned down 80? Yeah.
No, but that's the next bid, apparently, was right. The last I heard.
I mean, I can only imagine that if it was any other club, not any other club, but most other clubs, if they were bidding what Spurs have already bid, I think we would have accepted it. There's got to be a levy factor in this, because he's been such a bastard to deal with and really, you know, been a fly in the ointment of quite a few transfers. Well, particularly Kane stands out in terms of, like, just let the player do what he wants to do. Wouldn't accept a perfectly good offer. Maybe we're just playing hardball with him to say two can play that game. I mean, there's no guarantee that if we sold Savinho for 60 million and bought Rodrigo for similar, that Rodrigo would be a nailed on success. But you have to feel that nothing's guaranteed, but you have to feel that's a fairly cast iron improvement.
Well, I'm interested in Savinho specifically because, if I'm being perfectly honest, I don't really know whether he's going to be good for City, because last season, like as a team last season, City were so inconsistent and so like not like themselves. I want to know what Savinho looks like in a good City. Do you know what I mean?
True. Yeah. I feel like he's one of those players that on the training pitch, he can do absolutely anything, but you put him in a big game scenario and his decision-making goes to pot, and then, you know, he has flashes and his end product isn't that good. And then it's like, how old is he? He's only 21, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, you're very young.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, are we just losing our heads a bit? And I don't know. It's hard to know where to kind of centre the argument about him, whether he's going to be a world beater and that's why we're holding out for all this cash. Like, no, we are not letting him go unless it's ridiculous. We don't want another Cole Palmer situation. But I don't know. From what I've seen of him, I'm not massively sold. But then the swingometer is blurring with speed again, because it's like, well, he's 21 and he does show flashes of brilliance. Surely that's the sort of thing you do want to keep. So I don't know. I don't really get it.
Dan, it's like, when you think about the squad as well, I mean, we'll come to a question a bit later on about outgoings, but it does feel like City need to get a few players out of the door like ahead of like the bulk of the season before the end of the transfer window. And you can only sell players that you've got offers for. So if you've got a good offer for Savinho, it kind of feels like you might want to take it.
Yeah, maybe. But then, you know, like Chris mentioned, they are talking about replacing him with Rodrigo. I mean, I think it would be quite likely that they could sell him and actually not bother replacing him in the end, and probably wouldn't, you know. They do have a few options, like I've mentioned, in attack that, you know, they could probably be all right. They could probably live with that. And then, you know, it's one less pep for player to worry about having to sort of fit into the system or into the squad. I just think with Savinho, like, I think the club have done absolutely the right thing to drive a hard bargain, because I think there is a high probability that he goes on to be a brilliant player. I think he, you know, it's a little bit like what I was saying with Doku earlier, in that all that's lacking is a bit of end product. And obviously that's kind of the hardest thing to add to any game, like, you know, the biggest if there is. But I think with Savinho, he's a bit younger than Doku. He's got a little bit more time. I thought last season, yeah, he was frustrating, but there were moments where you thought, oh, wow, there's a real player in there. And, you know, for a first season in a new country, in a poorly performing team, like maybe it actually wasn't that bad. And maybe there is a chance. I mean, my sort of like big hot take for the season is that he ends up being really good. And I know a lot of City fans aren't sold on that at the moment, but I, you know, I think it's possible. And, you know, whenever a player is sort of like underperforming their XG like he is, like, it could just all click and suddenly he's like banging him in every week and it looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it does end up being another sort of Cole Palmer situation where it's like, why did we let him go? Like, you know, he could have, you know, just been a bit more patient or maybe held out for a bit more money. And, he could have been a real asset to the club. So, personally, I hope he stays. That's my personal hope. I hope he stays and that he goes on to be a really good player, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. A couple of other options for Spurs, Higgy. We know that Rodri can't do 90 minutes, but there's the possibility that he could be back on the bench this week and maybe come on, see the end of the game out. If it's a tight game, City can kind of use his experience towards the end of it. But one I'm really interested in is Ryan Cherki, who came off the bench to score against Wolves and looked really bright. Guardiola said like he will change the team for this game. There'll be players that weren't involved at Wolves involved in this one. Cherki, I know, was involved for 10 minutes or so, but he could be in there from the start. And he's one I feel like fans are desperate to see a lot more of.
Well, no, I am absolutely giddy about him. He just looks so exciting. Like, I can't wait to see more of him. To see him in the flesh starting on Saturday would be a dream, to be honest. But you just never know with Pep, do you? But I mean, he did say that players who weren't starting against Wolves would be starting against Spurs. So I expect he probably will start. See how he does.
Kai Gundogan, come on down.
Yeah, well, there's that as well. And it's quite, you know, sometimes these sorts of players are more impactful from the bench, especially as they're bedded into the side. But I don't know. I'd love to see him. He just looks just mad skills, bro. Mm.
Yeah, I feel really bad for Gundogan as well, because obviously he's such a good player that has done so much for City, but obviously he's become this whipping boy of what last season was. You know, in a good City team, maybe he's a lot better than he was last season, just like Savinho. Yeah. We'll come to the game predictions shortly, but this weekend is Manchester Pride, and Saturday's game kicks off while the parade is taking place through the city centre. On Thursday this week, City raised the LGBTQ plus flag at the Etihad to show their support, and I went along to find out more.
I'm Lee Broadstock. I'm the chair of City Matters and I'm also the LGBTQ fan rep. I think it's huge. I mean, I love City. I'm proud to be LGBTQ plus and open. I think it means so much to have those two things come together. But for me, what I love about City and what I continue to love about City is it still has that community family feel to it. And this is that sign of acceptance that the family feel that you are part of it. You are part of the club. They welcome the LGBT community and it feels like a real part of Manchester.
Danny Wilson, Managing Director, Manchester City Operations. We as a club are very inclusive. We pride ourselves on that. I think it's great, the coincidence now. We've got our first home game this weekend against Spurs. It's Pride weekend in Manchester as well. So being able to do our bit and celebrate within the city, for the city, for the people of the city and with our fans on Saturdays at a great occasion. Tonight was the start of it. We had an event last night where some people joined us. But it's a really important part of what we do. We're part of the community and we want to play our role.
It makes you feel that moment of celebration, of coming together, that energy, that re-energises you. For me, Pride does re-energise you, but also you get that sense of new focus, new energy, new drive with a new season as well. And the two things come together, just come together at the perfect time. And yeah, the fixtures again have played against us in terms of the game being on when there's the parade going on, but there's going to be members of the community here watching the game, but also members of the community and City staff at the parade. So two things going hand in hand. So it's great that we can still get to the parade whilst there is still an important match day on.
Seeing the flag that we just raised outside the stadium as well, hopefully give people comfort that we're aware of these things. We know the world's moved on significantly. There's been a lot of positive progress, but equally there's still an awful lot more that needs to be done. And we want to play our role in that. We know we can. We know we can influence voices. We know we can kind of move these things forward amongst our own fan base that will resonate outside of it. So it's a really important weekend and a really important day for us.
For those of us who are in the position, I think it's a privileged position where we're welcomed by family, we're welcomed by friends, colleagues, the club, and you feel open to be yourself. It's an amazing place to be. You really do feel yourself and could be your true self to everyone. Not everyone's at that stage. So to see some of that visibility will help those people along that journey. It might be the reason that they decide to come out, but it might play one part in them getting used to understanding where they are in their journey and coming out later on. Or you know what, it could also be a family member who's struggling with their identity and sexuality, that someone can see that there and go, you know what, my club supports, my club's inclusive, and that might be their in to helping a family member or friend. So it's so important to show inclusion, but also to do work around it as well. It's not just the flag being there as a token gesture.
Hello, this is Jason Manford and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
So we didn't win on our first attempt on the charity bet for the season, so we do go again this time around. William Hill is giving us three £10 correct score singles for City's games, and the winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. They've got their first collection of the season this week, so I caught up with Nick from the group beforehand.
Entering our sixth season collecting, we will be collecting outside weekend men's and women's home games for the foreseeable. The first collection will be the men's game against Spurs this Saturday. I'm really looking forward to it, seeing some of the regular faces and some new ones too, hopefully. We'll be at the end of Sir Howard Bernstein Way, right opposite the Asda, underneath the next entire bridge. And for the women's games, we are just straight outside the front entrances. And we'll be there an hour and a half before kickoff. We are accepting donations of non-perishable food and also toiletries for Manchester Central Food Bank, who are the biggest food bank in the Manchester region, and have been consistently supporting Mancunians in need who are really struggling. And I'll be honest, it's just been getting worse and worse every year. We thought it was going to improve after COVID, but things really hit hard for a lot of people. So we've been absolutely, you know, really overjoyed by the support that City fans have given us year on year. Very quickly, City fans became the largest regular donor to Manchester Central Food Bank. So last season we did 27 collections in total across men's and women's games. You know, we would have done more, but unfortunately the fixture schedules all the time, not good. Friday, Monday games, we can't do midweeks, unfortunately. But 27 collections over 2 tons of food raised, and including the cash donations, most of which came through the Just Giving page. We have a new one this year. You can see on all our socials at MCFC Food Bank. Equated to over 5,000 meals, emergency food parcels for people, like I say, people struggling in Manchester. So City fans are making a difference, have been making a difference for over 5 years now, and we'll continue to do so. Last year, one of the things that was a real positive was we got a lot more volunteers joining from the fan base, helping us out at men's collections, women's collections, a couple even. We could always do with more volunteer drivers to help. It's difficult because most of the people that we know are going to the games. But yeah, if anyone has any volunteer drivers, you can spare a little bit of time after the collections. That's always really useful. Yeah, we're going to keep doing what we're doing because the problem's not going away.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Nick from the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. Go and see them on Saturday with a donation if you can. Time now to get some predictions for the game. We heard Jack from Rule the Roost has gone for a 2-1 Spurs win. That's 16-1 and £160 if he's right. Dan, what are you having for this?
I'm going to go for a 2-1 City win.
2-1 City win is 13-2 and £65 if you're right. Higgy, you wanted 2-1, so bad luck. You got in there a little bit too late. What do you go for instead?
3-1, you know. Ever the optimist.
3-1. Yeah, that's how I always describe you, as the optimist of the podcast. Yeah. 9-1, if you're right, £90. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, take a look at begambleaware.org. Now, Saturday's game is a little bit tricky to predict, as we've already said. Not only are City still bedding in their new signings and in the process of correcting errors from last season, Spurs are also doing something similar while also adapting to life under a new manager. Thomas Frank has often made things hard for City while he was at Brentford as well, but now he's got the advantage of being in charge of one of City's bogey teams. It got us thinking about the teams that bring City fans out in a cold sweat. Even though City have had some success against Spurs recently, not one City fan enjoys playing them.
I wish I could explain it, mate, but not Liverpool, not Arsenal, not Chelsea. We're starting to get the measure of Man United a little bit latterly, but City, yeah, don't get it. I wish I did.
That's Spurs fan Jack from the podcast Rule the Roost. He says they always have some confidence because of recent history.
The realistic side of you always has in the back of your mind, this is still Manchester City. They're still one of the best teams in world football, so you can't ever get too cocky. But equally, I dare say, us having that kind of backing of knowing that we've gotten good results against you in the past few years helps quite a bit, really.
And Spurs aren't the only team that seem to have a bit of a hold over City. Nobody wants to draw Wigan in any of the cups anytime soon. Here's Barry Worthington from the Progress with Unity podcast.
I think the thing with Latics and City, since the end of Gorter, we seem to have the upper hand. So you just never know anyway with a cup game. Even though I'm thinking, you know, we're playing City, who are an absolutely fabulous side, and we're not going to win, you've always got that little hope in you that you were going to pull something out of the bag, and obviously we did.
Barry was talking about a win at the Etihad there in 2014. Now, since winning the FA Cup against City in 2013, Wigan have knocked City out of the competition twice more. There's that one in 2014, and then at the DW in 2018. Thankfully, there haven't been too many meetings between the teams in recent years, but it does mean that City haven't had many opportunities to end their poor run of form in the way that they have done against other opponents, like Everton. Here's Matt Jones from the Blue Room podcast.
I always remember going to the Etihad, and like every year you were getting like incrementally better at that point because the money had just started to come in, and Everton just always managed to find a way of just getting over the line there. Obviously, Tim Cahill was the one who typically scored at the Etihad at that end and celebrated all the time in that corner. For a while, it just felt like every time we'd go there, be like, no, this is surely the year where we're going to come unstuck because City are a real force now. But Everton managed to do well. And I suppose like looking back at some of those games, looking back at some of those Everton sides, like when you get in a team's head and you can go somewhere and, you know, opposition fans get a bit nervous, then you can kind of take advantage sometimes, can't you?
And boy, did Everton take advantage. For a few years before the 2008 takeover and a few years after, Everton would always seem to steal the points, often thanks to one player in particular, Tim Cahill.
I think everyone has those players, don't they? They always rock up at your stadium, you think they're going to do the business. And he sort of relished those occasions, I think, especially where, you know, City were obviously a big side and they were in Europe. It was a big game for us, and it kind of kind of grew as a big game for us because of, you know, the fact that we won there for so many years in a row. And, you know, I think for someone like him who was really up for the fight and would probably, against any team that kind of were a bit scared of him, a bit wary of him, he'd really sense blood.
For a while, it was a similar story with Stoke, but only when City were the away team.
There's so many really, really good games. And, like, there's a game where we equalise in the last minute where Tung Chai plays a back heel flick through to Etherington to equalise. And, like, there's a game where we should win, but there's a disallowed goal. And, like, for some reason, Man City against Stoke, they were really either exciting or dramatic games, really. I've got a lot of fond memories.
Bloody Peter Crouch. That
oh,
that
God,
goal.
Yeah. I forgot about that. The Crouch goal. Fucking hell. The best goal I've seen live. And I swear to God, I had the best view of that goal anyone has ever had because I was sat in the right spot in that stadium to see it from the back of the shot almost.
That's David Cowlishaw from the Wizards of Drivel podcast reminiscing about some better times for Stoke. The Britannia was certainly not a happy hunting ground for City at that time. And for a spell, it was the same for the Stadium of Light. Amp Waterson is from the Sunderland podcast Roker Report.
We seemed to have your number a little bit. I mean, never worked at the Etihad. We couldn't quite get the job done then. I think it was nice to have that, you know, that run of wins. And, you know, there was only really like kind of Newcastle who I think we won beat them six times in a row, which was a lot better. But yeah, it was nice. But again, just a really good defensive performance. Nip one at the other end. And that's what it was for 4 years, wasn't it? That we just seemed to be able to do it. It was weird.
We wouldn't say weird, probably more frustrating. Year after year after year, Sunderland would win 1-0. Ant says they couldn't believe the run kept going on.
To be honest, they all kind of had the same premise of the game where City pretty much dominated. I remember the first one when Bent scored a penalty, I believe, and Tevez missed an open goal, didn't he, when it got pulled back and he put it over the bar. But literally all four games was just City couldn't score. You know, either through superb defending or, you know, some great goalkeeping or power finishing. But at that time, you know, it was lovely. I think after the fourth one, we started saying, can we play you every week to the away fans, which was didn't go down really well.
City have also had a bad time against another team from the North East. Here's Five Live presenter and Middlesbrough fan, Steve Crossman.
I don't think it's ever been confidence because we've had so many brilliant results against City, but none of them have felt that likely before the game. People will mention the 8-1, obviously, but for me, the one that jumps out is winning as a championship side at Man City in the FA Cup. There was a moment in that game where Lee Tomlin turned Vincent Kompany in a moment which sums up Middlesbrough's relationship with Manchester City, just something that should never happen. And then I remember the following season in the Premier League even, we were 1-0 down and then Martin Deroon equalised like right in the last minute of the game. We went down that season. I think we're still the only team that Pep Guardiola's City have played in the Premier League but not beaten.
That is sadly true. Guardiola has beaten every single team he's faced in the Premier League apart from Middlesbrough, although he did win against them in that 2016-17 season in the FA Cup. Steve says there are just so many games where Borough have won out.
Do you remember Danny Teato scoring an absolutely unbelievable goal at the Riverside where he ran almost the length of the pitch, put it in the top corner, and it was disallowed and nobody knows why? And then obviously there's the classic when Borough needed a point to get into the UEFA Cup on the final day of the season, but if City won the game, then City got in the UEFA Cup. Similar to the 8-1, the goals were ridiculous. You think of that goal, you think of some of the goals in the 8-1, especially the Rockenbach free kick. So you asked me at the start, would Borough fans be confident against Manchester City? It sort of feels more like destiny, and I don't believe in destiny or fate, but how else do you explain that Lee Tomlin turn? I don't think there's any other way.
There's one other game when you didn't have a shot on or off target, but won the game 1-0.
Sun Chi Hai, own goal. Amazing. Doesn't make any sense. Makes no sense. Have you ever beaten us?
Rest assured, there are some wins against Middlesbrough in City's past, but with their record, it's probably a good thing that they, along with the likes of Wigan, won't be coming back to the Etihad this season, barring a bad draw in one of the cups. We'll just have to make do with the anxiety that Spurs and Sunderland will bring, starting with the game this weekend.
Hi guys, it's David Seaman, ex-City player. I've played a few times for Arsenal as well and England, but you're listening to the Blue Moon podcast.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. But don't worry, it'll be over soon.
There we go, some bogey teams there. Dan, any of that still kind of linger for you, even though like there's a couple in there, like Everton and Stoke, for instance. City did actually, yeah. they've kind of arrested the problem there. But you still get the anxiety every now and then, I guess.
Going to Goodison was always annoying. Like even in latter years when we won a lot there, I always sort of like felt, oh, bloody hell, Goodison, like we could struggle here because we went a long time without, you know, getting anything there really. And then even when we played Everton at home, there was that period where Tim Cahill scored every single game against us and did the boxing thing with the corner flag. So yeah, that's one. And I hope at their new stadium, we have a bit better luck. Like, who else is there? Yeah, Wigan, obviously, in the cups. That's been a real fucking pain in the arse, haven't they, over the years as well.
How are they so like? How are they such kryptonite to us? For two of those three eliminations, like one of the seasons they went down. The other two, they were already down.
Well, one they were in League One, weren't they? So we got 100 points that season. So it's like, there's definitely some hoodoo over us there. Yeah.
Yeah, Higgy, any for you that still stand out? I mean, like there's Middlesbrough in there, and Crossy from Five Live was basically saying, "Have you ever beaten Middlesbrough?" And I sat there and I thought, I can't remember a good day against Middlesbrough.
They knocked us out of both cup competitions one year, and I went to Ayrton Park for one of them, and it was just one of those, you know, the ultimate frustration game where everything you do, even if you're not playing that badly. Every 50-50, the ball squirts out and it goes straight to feet for them. And you're just like, what is going on here? It's literally like some sort of witchcraft going on. And the lad that I went to the game with also went to the other cup game they knocked us out of. And that one, like some sea fog descended. It might have been smog. I mean, it was Middlesbrough. But some kind of thick fog descended on the pitch where you couldn't see one end of the ground from the other. And the ref decided to play. I mean, I'm not saying that's why we lost, but... Yeah, it just, you know, it does nod towards some kind of witchcraft.
The one where they beat us without having a shot.
Playing Borough. Yeah, that, I mean, come on, that is unbelievable, isn't it? How can you beat someone such a high on goal. A shot on target? I don't think they had a shot, never mind on target, but yeah, awful. and Sunderland as well was always a bit like...
1-0, 1-0, 1-0.
Yeah, and you kind of felt it was happening before it even started, and then watching it transpire was just like, oh my God, it's happening again. How?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. It's like you're watching it unfold. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, there's literally nothing I can do to stop this nightmare happening in real time. Yeah.
I mean, tied to the floor with a steamroller approaching.
Yeah.
Did you tie someone to the floor? Sorry.
No, it would be a train track with the train coming, wouldn't it? But I assume that's what you meant. Yeah. Although, why would the steamroller be on a train track? Because it would just be crushing the tracks, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and then the roller wouldn't work, would it, if it was adapted to have train wheels to fit the gauge of the tracks. Anyway, analogy. Yeah,
there we are. Get in touch on Blue Sky. You can find us there, bloomingpodcast.com. You can email as well, contact@bloomingpodcast.com. Adam's been in touch. He actually WhatsApped me, but we'll say he emailed in. He says, Reinders is up there with the best debuts that I've ever seen at City. So what's your 11 of players who were great on their debut? So you've had your homework. You've built your teams of best City debutants. Dan, I'll start with you. Who makes your 11?
So the goalkeeper I thought was quite tricky, and then I just thought, well, it's probably James Trafford, isn't it? This team, by the way, is all players that have made the debut for City in my lifetime. So, with apologies to the over 40s, there might have a little bit of a difference with me and Higgy there in that respect, because Chris is obviously a lot older than me.
that was a backhanded compliment, wasn't it?
So yeah, I went for big Jim Trafford in goal. I did think about Joe Hart. The club did this compilation of like best debuts this week, and they had Joe Hart against was it Stoke?
Sheffield United.
And it's like, all right, he kept a clean sheet, but it wasn't some amazing debut. If his debut had been that one against Spurs, you know, the first game of the season, then you'd say, yeah, fair enough. But I think it was.
How old was he though?
He's probably 19.
If that.
Yeah, man. Possibly.
Yeah. I mean, I was also going to chuck in because Adam did suggest to me that second debuts should be allowed to count. So if they do count, then Hart would be right up there.
What's the second debut?
Well, the second game.
When you come back to the club for a second spell and then have your second debut.
Not having that.
So you've been away, you've played for another team, then you come back.
Absolute woke nonsense.
That is, yeah, the mind virus has got you.
All right, so moving on, I've got Daniel van Buyten.
Oh.
Can't remember who he played against. Was it, I want to say Birmingham.
He had
a great game. I mean, he only played about three games or something. But I remember on his debut at the City of Manchester Stadium, as it was then, people just being in awe of him. We got him on loan from Bayern Munich, I think, didn't we?
Minute for minute, Daniel van Buyten, for the amount that he played for City, I think he's the most talked about player on this podcast.
Yeah. Probably, yeah. I think he's one of them that people were just talking about him for years afterwards. Get van Buyten back. He's never coming back, lads. He's way too good for us.
He's 43. Get him back. and then
I've got big Kwame Mang, Eloquim Mangala. Got to have him in there, haven't you?
Kwame Mang.
Yeah. And then to round off my back three, I've got Stuart Pearce.
Yeah.
Free kick on his debut against Watford. And then moving into midfield. So I've gone for a 3-4-3. In midfield, I've got Reinders. I've got Ilano against West Ham. Didn't get on the score sheet, but that was a great assist for that first goal for Bianchi. Giovanni, who did get on the score sheet that day. I've got him on there. And Steve McManaman. He was great against Aston Villa and then completely shite for the next 2 years. But what a debut. Then Aguero up front. Hat-trick against Swansea, of course. Haaland got two goals against West Ham. And it's got to be Benjani, hasn't it?
Has to be. Yeah. Has to be, yeah.
His goal at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
And I've got a manager.
A solid 11. Oh, you've got manager bench, as well.
So my manager will be Sven. Because, I don't know if that's the best ever performance on a manager's first game in charge, that one at West Ham, but, it kind of felt like a real moment, didn't it, that, everyone's really fond of.
Can I chuck in Pellegrini against Newcastle?
You can. I don't think it was quite as impactful, to be honest.
You can, but you're wrong.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he went on to win the league, unlike Sven, but just that first game for Sven, I just thought it just felt like a sort of, a moment in time, a changing of the guard or whatever you want to call it. And then a few other players that I thought of that didn't quite make the cut. So I've got Andy Morrison, scored against Colchester on his debut, I believe. Bianchi, I was going to put him in, but he did score in that West Ham game, but he didn't quite make the cut ahead of the other forwards. Adebayor as well, scored at Blackburn on his debut. And then Nasri played really well in that game, that 5-1 game at Spurs. And I thought, why not Cherki as well for scoring on his debut at the weekend?
So a solid, very attacking bench you've got there, Dan. So you can always make some attacking changes if need be.
Well, Andy Morrison will sort it out, don't worry.
Yeah, it'd be fine. Higgy, run us through your 11 and let's see how similar they are.
I mean, given that Dan's just named every player that's ever debuted for City, I think that's a good place to end the podcast right there. that was really good listen, actually. And I agree with pretty much everything, although I did have Hart in between the sticks because for a really young goalkeeper to come in and keep a clean sheet, I think is really positive. I also had Daniel van Buyten in defence. And I mean, Mangala, the ultimate impressive debut.
The all-timer of a debut, isn't it? Yeah.
Given what followed. Vincent Kompany. I've got in there. He had a really good debut. Started off in midfield, went to centre back, which was like, you know, a bit of a microcosm prophecy of what was to come. And at left back, I've got Stuart Pearce, who scored on his debut. Midfield, again, McManaman, 4-1 against Spurs, was absolutely fantastic in that game. And then just stood around pointing, tucking his hair behind his ears for the rest of his City career. I've got, had to include Reinders. How do you pronounce it?
Reinders.
Not to
yeah,
say.
He says, so Reinders, the Premier League have done those videos, haven't they? And I'm sure he says Reinders on it. Yeah.
Okay, I've got Reinders. Benarbia.
Yeah. Did you mention Benarbia, Dan?
No, I completely forgot about him.
Yes, I got
that's a great one.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's a line, wasn't there, from Keegan where he said, he came back on the Saturday morning, I put him in the team, and he got a standing ovation when he took a corner after about 20 minutes. That's how good he was, which really sums up the quality of that impactful debut. I've got Cherky in there as well because he just looks amazing. And up front, I've got Aguero, for obvious reasons. But I've gone for Niall Quinn as well because he scored on his debut against Chelsea. And I loved Quinny. And I, obviously, when I was thoroughly researching, as I always do.
Did you fall down a rabbit hole of watching Niall Quinn goals?
No, I didn't actually. But I just, on the official club webpage, it said Quinn scored the only goal in a 1-1 draw. So that's got to be some feat. So just
yeah,
for that,
I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
Christian Ngoui nearly made it just for
really?
Some giggles. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, certainly impactful.
Did you mention Aguero, Dan? I don't think you did. Did you? You
didn't I
have
did.
Aguero
yeah.
up top. You did have Aguero up top with Haaland and Benjani. Yeah. Which is another solid debut, Higgy. Given that he only played half an hour as well.
And then Giovanni's second game scored the only goal in a. Was it a 1-1 win against United or no, it was 1-0
win? 1-0 win, yeah.
You know, I nearly put Nicky Weaver as my goalkeeper. If
See,
I'm not
I
mistaken,
wonder if anyone would do this, yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, his debut was against Jamaica in that friendly and he did keep a clean sheet.
Not a debut though, that is it though.
Probably not. But he kept a clean sheet against the whole of Jamaica. Fair play.
He did against Blackpool in the
they didn't
the
all play.
The next season. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
It felt like it, Chris.
I also wondered if for right back any of you were going to twist the good old full debut card, play that one, because Rico Lewis scored against Sevilla on his full debut, but he'd played about five or six times from the bench already by then.
No, that's woke nonsense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, none of that. So hopefully, Adam, that scratches that itch of an 11 that have made great City debuts. We're going to finish with John, who got in touch on the emails to say two quick questions on transfers. Who from the arrivals in January and the summer will be the most important? And who from the squad should or will leave based on Pep wanting a smaller squad? So let's start with the summer impacts, or the January impacts as well, Dan, because there's a couple of players that we haven't really mentioned that joined in January that I know a few people were excited about this season. For instance, Kucinov as a centre-half. He came on against Wolves. Like, who do you think out of the players that City have signed over the course of the last 12 months or so will be the ones that they build this next kind of iteration of City around?
Yeah, so I think, like we mentioned earlier, Reinders, I think he's just going to be really important. I think he's going to play most of the games this season. He'll just be one of those kind of, you know, barring injury or something like that, just like one of those really consistent presences in the team that, like, Pep really falls in love with. I'm really pleased about that. And I'm not sure, like, I am as excited as Chris is about Cherky, but I think there's, you know, it's one of them that it could go one or two ways, that he could either be absolutely amazing or he could be a bit of a flop. And, like, we just don't know what it is yet. But you know, that was an encouraging debut. He took his goal really well. So if he, you know, looks anything like he did in France, and you know, kind of fulfills the potential that he has, then he could be, you know, a really important player straight away. Especially with that kind of like injection of creativity needed with De Bruyne leaving in the summer. And also, yeah, I'm really positive as well as what I said about Gonzalez earlier about Kucinov. Actually, like, you know, I was impressed with him last season.
And I was really confused.
Yeah, another one. Yeah, yeah. I mean, aside from the first 5 minutes, it actually was a really good debut. But that first 5 minutes is what people remember, don't they? Yeah. But yeah, I thought, you know, he got, I think he got the club's player of the month in his first month and just, you know, looked decent. And then just went out of the team for whatever reason. Never got back in the rest of the season. So it's good to see him sort of being put in again on the first day of the season, that he is still part of the plans. I think he could be a valuable asset as a right back at times this season. You know, I think his pace and his ability to like get a tackle in and reading of the game is really good, like really impressive for a young player. So hopefully he'll have benefited from, you know, a bit of work on the training pitch over the last few months, if not the actual pitch, and will be able to make a big contribution this season, because I think we've got a real talent there.
Yeah. Higgy, obviously you talked about Cherki before. Are there any others? I mean, like Marmoush, for instance, came in January, and we haven't really talked about him on today's show.
I think he's going to be solid. Needs to sort his offsides out, although we've been blessed and maybe spoiled a bit with Haaland notoriously born onside. But for me, it's the midfield, where if those players play to their potential, that is where it happens for me. Reinders, Gonzalez. I think they will, if they play well, they will be the most important, because that will mean the rest of the team are able to play well from that. And God knows Pep loves a midfielder. And yeah, for me, that's the key area, engine room in it.
Yeah. How about the other way, Kiki, for outgoings? Because we do think the squad is slightly too big for what Guardiola wants at the moment. Yeah. So, like, who are the players? I mean, there's rumours that Nathan Ake could be on his way again to Everton following Grealish. But Akanji as well is rumoured to be heading over to Turkey, although I think he posted on Instagram that this is nonsense. Like who do you see as the most likely candidates to be out the door?
Probably Savinho. I tend to agree with what Dan was saying earlier, even though I was kind of posturing about Rodrigo coming in to replace him and what a coup that would be, and it's like a no-brainer. If we did get rid of Savinho for a lot of money, Pep needs a small squad. We do have cover in that position, and it's really good cover. I wouldn't want to see Aki go, although kind of conversely, the reason I don't want to see Aki go is because I suspect that this comfort blanket that is Diaz and Stones partnering again, you know, like a lot of old comfort blankets, a lot of patchwork there, and they may be in need of repair at some stage in the season. Is Aki the defensive, reliable, non-injury cover that you really want to come in? If we get good money for Aki and he's not got long in his contract and he goes to Everton and doesn't stay fit there, it's going to look like really good business. But I don't know. I just really like Aki as a player and as a defender. And there might be times in the season where we need to have more defensive shape than maybe Eight Nuri provides. And Aki, for me, is the man to do that, because he's really good.
Still got Guardiola in there, though.
That's true. Not really a left-back, but has played so well there with a few clangers, but, we allow that. Yeah, I don't know. Aki, I guess, with his injury record, and if how long has he got into contract? Is he another one with a year left?
I think so, but yeah. I couldn't say off the top of my head.
If we can get good money for Aki, I would reluctantly say yes from a sort of, you know, club business perspective. And Savinho, yeah, they're the two for me, I would say on reflection.
Yeah, Dan, it's tricky, isn't it? Because, as I said before, you've got to have offers for players to be able to move them on. If you've got players that are contracted for 2 or 3 years and there's no offers to take them, then it doesn't matter whether you want rid of them or not. There's nowhere for them to go.
Yeah, well, there's a bit of talk about Gundogan, isn't there, in the last sort of 24 hours or so, of there actually being quite a bit of interest in him from fairly like decent level clubs. So it wouldn't surprise me if he moved on now. Which would be a bit of a shame, but, you know, I think he's a bit over the hill, isn't he, to be honest? He'd be sort of a decent option to have around in the dressing room and stuff, and someone who can come in for maybe the odd game, but you wouldn't really want to see him starting, you know, many sort of high-profile games this season, I don't think, really. So if he goes, I would sort of wish him well, but, you know, it wouldn't be a massive loss at this point as well. What kind of concerns me a little bit about this whole Pep wants a smaller squad, we need to get rid of players and stuff, is I would have thought that one of the big lessons from last season was that with the increasing demands of top-level football and playing in four competitions, that you need a big squad nowadays. You need to be able to rotate. You know, we got down to the bare bones at times last season. We're having to put, like, you know, Simpson Pusey in and players like that. And yeah, we strengthened in January and we strengthened again in the summer, and you have to sort of like shuffle the squad a little bit. But I just worry that we might get to a situation where we have a bit, we have an injury crisis this season and then we're a bit short again. And it's like, I get Pep's philosophy that he doesn't want any bad faces, that he wants to keep people playing regularly and on their toes and stuff. But I just think you've just got to get better at sort of juggling your squad and managing your resources, and playing with a really small squad could be problematic, because I look around the league and I see other teams with lots and lots of depth, and I think we could be, you know, putting ourselves into a corner a little bit. Hopefully not. Hopefully it does work out and, you know, everyone is fit and firing for the whole season. I think we're due a bit of luck with injuries after last season. But yeah, I just don't want them to sort of like cut the nose off to spite the face at this point, really.
Yeah.
I've said it before, actually. I don't know. I'd be interested to see the stats on injury levels and teams that end up winning the league. It feels very much sometimes like the from the top few teams, you know, your Arsenals, your Liverpools, your Cities, if you keep all your best players fit, you win the league, and inevitably the ones who don't do so well have gone, oh, well, we didn't do it because this guy was out for so long, we didn't do it because this guy was out for so long. And that you kind of make it that more difficult with a small squad. So, yeah, I don't know. It's Pep in it. It's what he wants. So you got to go with it, because he seems to have a fairly good track record from what I'm led to believe. So, yeah.
Is it City that are the exception that proves the rule there as well? Because the years where they've had major injury crises, they lost Laporte for the whole of that 1920 season, yeah. And we're a long way off. They lost, obviously, last season, everybody for so long. But obviously Rodri was the big one. But then also they've won the title in years where they've lost De Bruyne for like a lot of the season, and they've had injuries to key players at various points, and still gone on and won the title. So it feels like
rubbish. Okay, I get you. That's
it just feels like maybe that's just Guardiola being the difference. I don't know.
Yeah, yes, quite possibly, and yeah, that's why he's the best. But yeah, it's just a gamble, isn't it? Gamble responsibly, Pep.
Yeah, indeed. Let's finish then with the answer to the trivia question that we posed at the start. Erling Haaland's got 21 Premier League goals in the month of August across his 12 games in that month. Only two players have more than him, taking 44 and 47 games respectively. Who are they? Any ideas? Any ideas popped into your heads during the recording, Dan?
Andy Cole.
Higgy?
Thierry Henry.
Okay, so we have one correct answer from you. Sadly, not Thierry Henry, Higgy. Andy Cole, 25 in 44 games. Two of them were for City. Yeah. There you go. The other player was Les Ferdinand, 22 goals in 47 games in the month of August. Haaland, 21 in 12. So he's doing all right.
Why do I feel like I've just lost a quiz?
Because you've technically just lost the quiz, but it was just a bit of fun. There was no kind of music for this one, so it doesn't really matter. This wasn't a proper quiz.
Oh, I'm still feeling quite downbeat about that. Fair enough. Well done, Dan.
Well, I'm sorry about that.
Less than you have lost quizzes to me, Chris.
Yeah, that is the end of this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks also to my guests for this one. Dan Burke.
My pleasure, thank you.
And Chris Higginbottom.
Thanks for having us. Cheers.
We have a clip of this week's Nostalgia episode coming up as me and Dom Farrell sat down with Watford fan David Walker from the Football Clichés podcast to chat about four games between the teams. Normally it's City Heaven, City Hell, but because of the results against Watford in all of our lifetimes on that episode, it's City Heaven, Watford Hell. Still honestly baffled that David said yes to doing that, but you know, credit to him. Thank you very much for doing it. If you want to listen to the full thing, it's just £2 per month, and you can sign up by going to members.bluemoonpodcast.com. I'll be back next week after the game with Spurs. I'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
To be 5-0 down after 18 minutes is just absurd. And I think Nicolas Otamendi surely is the earliest ever man to get in on the act with scoring the fifth in the 18th minute, which is incredible. The Watford podcast that I do from the Rookery end decided that on this day, that John, Mike and Jason, the main three guys who've been doing the podcast for 15 years now, they decided that they would do a match of the day challenge and they would avoid the results from the 3 p.m.s. And when we saw that we were up first, you know, you think, have we sprung an upset here? What's happened here? And then it was just that the entire podcast was just Mike in particular descending into just this absolute blind rage, just couldn't believe what he was seeing. It's probably the podcast episode that most people still talk to us about these days if they ever see us out and about. So it does have a bit of a place in our memories. And it just... Again, it was a sign of the really desperate shape we'd managed to get ourselves into so quickly.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.